I don't think that there's a big community of like minor, there might be some minor attracted people who are also like, I would never even look at a picture or read a story, but I think they're in a, I think the general consensus in that world right now is we won't touch kids, but we'll draw pictures and write stories.
This is so messy. And it goes back to what we were talking about before about alcohol prohibition. What's the best way to do? If you ban it from everyone, there's going to be moonshiners making bootleg child sex dolls, you know, out of like a Cabbage Patch thing with a fleshlight inside. And then like, so there's a whole underground community of, but then, you know, in Germany, they make the drinking age 16, and then that might contribute to certain degeneracy, but there's other things. It they put less of a stress on the importance of it, which means, you know, it's kind of like Amsterdam. All drugs are legal. They have the least amount of drug addicts because they could get it. So it's not a big deal.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for joining me for another episode of Politically Nonbinary. I am Ariel Isaac Norman, your politically androgynous and opinion fluid host. This is fun. So Politically Nonbinary, for those of you who are new, is my podcast where guests come on and they share their opinions about things, how things should be in society, some kind of societal change they should make or criticism, something like that. And we explore their ideas together. New guests can either bring on a new topic that they want to discuss, or they can respond to a previous topic. And that's what this episode is going to be. My guest, Eric Hollerbach, wanted to respond to my episode with the trans woman pedophile, the trans woman not offending pedophile. If you haven't listened to that episode, I would highly recommend going back and listening to, well, it's actually a two-parter, going back and listening to those. You don't have to, though, because Eric actually played clips from the episode, and then we discussed those. That's how most of this episode is going to be. But still, I would say there's a lot of content. And why wouldn't you want to go listen to me talk to a trans woman pedophile? Non-offending. So yeah, Politically Nonbinary, it's like, this is such a fun thing for me. This way we can build the conversation. Like, everyone knows we need to have more conversations, but people are so polarized now, and it's, we live in these divisive times. And so a lot of y'all don't want to talk to each other. So I get to be the middleman. I love being in the middle. You ever been in the middle of a threesome? You know, when it's like, with two people who they wouldn't fuck each other, but if you're there, then it works. That's how I feel about the entire culture. I'll be Hulk's little, okay. I'm, but sincerely, it's how I feel about it. I love it. I get off on it. I get off on the fact that I see everyone's points, and I also play devil's advocate. I have critiques for everyone, you know, criticisms for everyone's ideas. But I think I'm pretty easy to talk to. You'll hear it. As if you continue to listen to this podcast, you'll see that I talk to people of all sorts, and I really get on with all of them. I was trying to be British. I get on with them. My guest today is Eric Hollerbach. I met him through a friend because he was teaching me some kickboxing Muay Thai moves, and then I had him feature for me at a comedy show. And we'll do his plugs at the end, but he's an interesting guy. And he wanted to, like I said, he wanted to respond to the trans woman non-offending pedophile episode. So some of the things we talk about in this is like discussing whether it is better to, for there to be child sex dolls or even just erotica or pictures, the sort of things that are in that gray area for the people who think about these questions. There's debate about whether it's better to have any of that, because a lot of us, you know, feel icky about any of it even existing. But for people who do experience pedophilic attractions, is it better for them to have those things, or would it be better for them to forego it? That's a big topic for us. Also, like, who you should come out to if you find yourself attracted to children. At one point, we compare pedophiles to rats, but not in the way that you're thinking. It was a scientific metaphor about the study, and anyway, and then children are likened to heroin in that metaphor. You'll see. And we do some really armchair psychoanalyzing of the roots of pedophilia, or at least the roots of my original guest's pedophilia. We also wound up talking about circumcision for a while. That's one of my topics that I like. And then we talk about identity and the idea of whether people should identify as pedophiles or just think of that as a struggle that they have, and how the conceptualization of identity can play a role in the outcomes of our experience. We go on a whole thing about whether some queers just need to get outside more and play sports. And we discuss, you know, the practice in this culture of kind of dressing kids up in sexy ways, and just, you know, that maybe we should think about that a little bit, among other things. There's some interesting little economic stuff sprinkled in there at the end, but I think you're going to enjoy this episode, so let's get to it. Never mind, I'm an idiot. One more thing. This was actually recorded as Eric Hollerbach's podcast originally, Highway Diaries, so you can check that out. I mean, he'll be plugging it at the end, so if you hear it, you know, at the end when we're plugging stuff, in the way that the whole podcast sounds, like, we recorded it as Eric's podcast, and then we just decided to make it to a crossover podcast because I was like, oh, you're actually responding to my episode. That's a politically non-binary episode. So, having my producer just make it into an episode of this podcast, but that's what's going on whenever you hear him at the end, like asking me for my plugs and whatnot. And yeah, so Eric Hollerbach of the Highway Diaries podcast, crossover podcast with politically non-binary. Now enjoy.
This is Zach with the Texas Yurt Company, a proud sponsor of Politically Non-Binary. We're building beautiful handcrafted yurts in the Texas Hill Country. Find us online at www.texasyurts.com.
Talk a little shop, but you had a transgender, self-identified trans pedo on your podcast, and you gave...
Non-offending.
Okay.
She's attracted to children and adults, and has never touched a child, and promises never to touch a child.
Which is interesting, because that's like saying, I identify as a murderer. How many people have you killed? None? Huh?
No, because pedophile is the attraction. Your pedo children or whatever, file love. So it's like you're attracted to the child. But that's why they say child molester is someone who, if you said I identify as a child molester, and then they were like, how many kids have you molested? None. That would be weird. Yes. Whole thing's weird. Pedophile, you could, just like you could identify as gay, but you're 14 and you've never had sex or whatever version of
it. Yeah, I see that. Like, I identify as a serial killer. Like, what's your, I don't know. That's the analogy that keeps coming up for me. But you had two.
That's because we've used the word pedophile colloquially for a long time to mean someone who does fuck kids or whatever. And so that's one of those things. And that's why some people say MAPS, minor attracted persons, or this, that, or the other, because they want to distinguish so we can say, like, so because if someone wants to be able to talk to a therapist and not be put in jail for saying, hey, I'm attracted to kids, you know, and I really need help, then they should be able to do that. So it would be nice to have some language to distinguish. And so that's what they're just trying to say. Like, yeah, people use the word pedophile different ways, but there's child molesters, and then there's people who are attracted and they're not. And a lot of times people molest children, even though they're not particularly attracted to children. And then a lot of people who are particularly attracted to children, whether they're attracted to both adults and children or just children, aren't molesting kids. So, you know, that's why we're making that distinction.
You had two disclaimers on your episode. I'm going to play both of them.
Hey, everyone. A quick note before the rest of this is that due to the sensitive nature of this content, I had to take the episode down and modify my guest's voice to be less recognizable. And because all the messages that I had gotten the first few days of this episode were out, were very positive, and were thanking me and my guest for our bravery and for our compassionate and thoughtful look into this difficult issue. But my guest's partner became too nervous that someone could find her identity and that it would make her unsafe. And so they asked me to change her voice. That was the solution that we came up with so that we could still have this episode out. But I had already mixed the whole episode, so I could really only do that by changing both of our voices. So that's why we both sound trans now.
Okay, so you had to change the voice, change the identity.
Yeah.
This person doesn't want their name on it. You know, I get all that. And station note two.
Yes, part of the appeal is that it's a hilarious premise to me that I get to, you know, talk to a trans woman in quite a while. But the reality is that we have a very thoughtful, beautiful, compassionate conversation about how to improve society for kids so that they're not getting molested as much. I'm never going to be able to get it down to zero, unfortunately, but how we can help kids get molested less, and how we can help the people who are afflicted with the attraction to kids, because that sucks for them too. So this is.
It sucks for them too. By the way, your voice is moderated there, so you know you're not speaking in your native. Yeah, it's interesting because I've had intrusive thoughts in a weird way. Like when I was going to the dojo every day when I first learned Muay Thai, anyone who is the height of, there's this thing called Bob, who's like, you know, a dummy that you kick his head. Anyone who is the same height, I would be like, I could head kick this person retarded right now just from the training. So I would have intrusive thoughts of like, oh, they're the right, like I could head kick this person, like, you know, just like on the street or whatever. Never did. That's an intrusive thought, you know? So if this person, you know, it's so hard for me to sympathize with this person for obvious reasons, having nieces and nephews and all that, where it's like every kid they see, they have this intrusive thought of like, oh, that's an attractive person.
I don't think it's every kid. I think it's still only the kids that are hot to them.
Right.
Just putting it out there. Do you know what I mean? I think I'm pretty sure that would be horrible if you were literally attracted to every kid. You know what I mean? No matter how fat, no matter how obnoxious, I think it's still only the hot kids.
My friend Kyle Woods has such a funny joke. He goes, oh, people are into kids. It's disgusting. They always have like Rice Krispies on their fingers. Oh, they're
right.
Gross.
Sticky. I always just say, I don't understand wanting to fuck kids. I mean, sometimes you're standing in line behind a couple of 15-year-old girls and they're talking and they're like, oh my God, like, I can't believe we can't take selfies at the Holocaust Museum. What is that? And you're like, well, I could understand fucking them to death, you know, whatever, but not making love.
So clip three here, this is where we start to talk to your guest.
That being said, do you want to introduce yourself? However you want to. I realized I was into kids a few years ago, and it's been strange, to say the least.
So you realized you were into kids a few years ago, you said. I know you don't want to give, like, identifying information, but could...
So this person, you know, realized this and went to a bunch of support groups. So they started going to meetings to alleviate their symptoms. But at the same time, I believe that this person is in some sort of feedback loop where they're sort of associating with a lot of other pedos, right? So
They didn't go to groups. There's no groups you can go to. They found, I think, things online, groups online, where you can be anonymous and then you can talk to other people who, have experienced these attractions. So I think that's. Yeah, that's what okay. They did. Because they said they would love to talk to a therapist, but they can't because they've had a friend talk to a therapist before who was immediately reported.
Mm. Yeah, and they have mandatory reporting.
Yeah, which it's up to the therapist how to interpret that, because if you are like presenting a danger to, but if you say that you're not going to molest a kid, they don't have to report that. It's up to them to interpret whether you're posing that threat or not, but you can't just rely on that a therapist is just going to trust you. And, you know, so she just can't, but she did find, they find communities online. And I mean, I think a lot of what these people who have these attractions, I mean, in the kink world, it's generally accepted right now that it is healthy and fine to draw pictures of things that you're into, to do erotic fiction. You know, most of these people are pretty much pro, if you could do child sex dolls, that's a good thing. Their whole thing is like, as long as you're not hurting children, there's nothing wrong with any of this. And, you know, I always ask, like, because there's been some hypothesizing from psychologists. I mean, not that, you know, Freud is pretty outre, but like, there's been some idea that, well, maybe if you indulge in some of this stuff, then it will just lessen. It's like the two schools are like, if you indulge in it, then that'll satisfy the craving and you won't go further. But, or if you indulge in it, and maybe it desensitizes you and then you want more. And how she put it to me was that, that's not like, she doesn't struggle not to rape people she's attracted to. The same way I don't struggle to rape people that I'm attracted to. Now, men struggle a little differently, perhaps. But she's, you know, also chemically castrating herself down to the sex drive of a woman, essentially. So that's helpful. I think if you're going to be a pedophile, you should be trans, you know, or not a trans man. But, you know, if you're attracted to kids, you know, the government used to put just gay people on into this chemical castration situation. And now these trans people want to pay for themselves. The best, and that's actually a good joke to make, though, is about how the safest pedophiles are the trans women, because they're taking testosterone blockers and that helps them to be less whatever. But so that's the thing, is like, just because you're attracted to someone doesn't mean that you would ever just rape them. And so these people seem to feel very safe and fine being like, look, we'll draw our little anime cartoons of this stuff. You know, she would agree that actual child pornography is completely wrong and bad and disgusting and evil, but that she would feel like it's a good thing. It's fine to go ahead and indulge in the pictures and the fantasies, but to not, I'm pretty sure that's what she does. I don't think that there's a big community of like minor, there might be some minor attracted people who are also like, I would never even look at a picture or read a story, but I think they're in a, I think the general consensus in that world right now is we won't touch kids, but we'll draw pictures and write stories.
This is so messy. And it goes back to what we were talking about before about alcohol prohibition. What's the best way to do? If you ban it from everyone, there's going to be moonshiners making bootleg child sex dolls, you know, out of like a Cabbage yeah. Patch thing with a fleshlight inside. And then like, so yeah. There's a whole underground community of, but then, you know, in Germany, they make the drinking age 16, and then that might contribute to certain degeneracy, but there's other things. They put less of a stress on the importance of it, which means, you know, it's kind of like Amsterdam. All drugs are legal. They have the least amount of drug addicts because they could get it. So it's not a big deal when it's, you got to go down a dirty alleyway right. to pick up your stuff.
But, that's yeah. But most of the drugs, many of the drugs that we think of as like the bad drugs that are legal in the sense not that you can get them at the corner store. They're legal in the sense that you can go to certain clinics and say, hey, I'm an addict, and we'll even get clean heroin instead of buying it on the street. Just point of order, because I think sometimes when people hear all drugs are legal, they're thinking, oh, you go down to the Trader Joe's and get your crack. No, it's in a safe and regulated, you know, place. And yeah, so it's possible that if we had a sort of methadone child sex doll clinic situation, that would be better, because who knows what happens. There are some people who are young and savvy at the internet, and they know that they can find this group of people that they can come out to. Because I think if you feel like you have to be alone and not tell anyone that you have this big thing going on, like she said, she used to just have intrusive thoughts about being attracted to children. And it's possible that that intrusive thought situation led to her actually being attracted to kids. You know, it's just terrifying that that could happen to someone. And who knows? We don't know. But if you are having those thoughts, or if you get to the place where you're like, this is a big struggle for my life, I think being able to talk to people seems essential. I think if you carry that and repress it and deal with it, like that's just, I think about the things in my life that aren't anywhere near being attracted to children that I've tried to deal with in that way of not talking about it, of repressing it, trying to ignore that problem. Like that doesn't go well for me. So I can only imagine if it's a secret that big.
Like you're a Mormon. All you want is to be with another lady and have coffee. And you just kind of like, no, Mormonism, you know, Joseph Smith, and you live in two worlds. You make a great joke here. I just want to point this is the next clip here.
When you say that you're into kids, is there an age range?
Yes. You know, I've been into people between 3 and 55. You know, I'm not an exclusive pedophile. When we still get some pedophilia thing, you know, like 9 to 14-ish, I would say.
9 to 14, yes. So that one's the one that's hebephilia?
Yeah.
Do you know where that comes from, where we get these little heads?
I have no idea. I think it might be Greek or Latin.
Yeah. Okay. Just feels like it should be like, people who are into Jews or something, but
that's a great joke. That's a great joke. And, you know, you're right in the pocket right there. You're talking about this person just said they're into someone between 3 and 55, which is like, oof. And then they're like, well,
3-year-old.
They said 3 to 55 first. And then they said more specific.
9 to 14 is their sweet spot.
That's their sweet spot. But they've been attracted to 3 to 55 in the full range of it.
Which is like me and boobs. You know what I mean? My 9 to 14 would be B to triple D. But yeah, you know, there's an A cup every now and then if attached to a woman I'm super in love with. But sorry, just thought it'd be a hilarious juxtaposition to make a 3-year-old an A cup in my
analogy. That's the hard one for me because it's like, I don't know.
You have to compartmentalize that you're talking about this. You don't imagine your niece. You know what I mean? You just
go into
comedian lockbox brain mode. That's what I do anyway.
I know, but it's just like, you know, when you're around kids, they're just so vulnerable. They're so like, even a kid is walking with flip-flops on a sidewalk, I'm worried that they're going to crack their fucking head open. Like, that's my like kind of like instinct pops in immediately. So when this person says,
well, they're very resilient.
They'll come back. All right. Let's do this next clip from your trans and my
I was really in that self-hating phase. I confided in a few friends about it because, you know, like I felt like I had to talk to someone. And most of them were pretty okay with it, you know, not like okay, but like they reassured me, like, you know, the fact that you're so concerned means you're probably not gonna do anything.
Okay, so I think a lot of people would wonder if you're attracted to both adults and kids. It's kind of okay, and it just reminds me of when you ask a bi chick why she needs to come out to her parents if she's dating a dude or whatever, you know. But there is, especially with this, I feel like there's another layer of like, I can see why you'd want to confide to a few friends for sure. You know, everyone needs to confide in things. But do you feel like you wish that you could be more out about it, or is it just like, I just wanted my friends to know?
I do kind of wish I could be more out about it.
Okay. So if I could just have a little thought experiment, right? So yeah. let's take this completely out of it. You're in HEB, Heeb grocery store. Is that for the Jews? You're in this grocery store.
There we go. There's the Heebophile. See, now what are we supposed to call people who are really into HEB or Jews? If these pedophiles have taken Heebophile.
I'm just trying to ingratiate into the Jewish intelligentsia. So I'm just saying what I have to. All right. Let's say you're in the ice cream aisle. Okay. And you really like Rocky Road ice cream, but you also really like mint chocolate chip ice cream. Right. And then it comes out in a documentary that the only way that they can make Rocky Road ice cream is if,
by fucking kids.
Yeah, there's massive child abuse involved. Yeah. They can't get into it, but they take the peanuts and they throw them individually at a baby skull. It's the only way to get the consistency of Rocky Road ice cream, right?
Right.
They have to be completely destroyed. You know that for sure, because psychologists have been like, look, we got to close down this Rocky Road ice cream factory. You know, the trauma is not getting good outcomes for our society. Have mint chip and shut the fuck up with your preferences. Now this might sound rude, but I'll just play devil's advocate here. Like, you are not, in my opinion, you are not your preferences. In my opinion, you are not your tastes. You are, if you're like, that's what drives me nuts about hipsters. Oh, I like this band. Oh, you don't know about that band? I'm better than you. Like, my tastes are like more refined than you. Ugh. What did you do, hipster, twat? Nothing? You like a band? Okay, like, that has nothing to do with you, right? So your tastes are, and your preferences are not you. And to spiral about this is just narcissism. Have mint ice cream and go to work every day. Mind your business. So that's what's going on for me. It's like, this person is like a minor attractive person, which I don't even, that term bothers me. But it's like part of being an adult, I love parking in handicap stalls. Why? Because it's so close to the place. I don't have to look for a parking spot. My preference is to park in a handicapped person. I'm not handicapped though. I'm able-bodied. So you know what I do? I don't park in a handicapped thing because I'm not a psychopath, because I realize that that's there for a reason.
Although you did just come out to me about wanting to park in the handicapped spot. So I don't know. Because that's, do you remember what she said right after she said, I kind of do want to be more out about it? I'm trying to remember what her reasoning was, other than just, you know, I think, again, it just feels like a burden to keep that a secret and to not be able to tell a therapist, because I would give her that much. I would say you should be able to confide to a few friends, and your online thing seems like a great place for it. You know, you find the anime on Twitter and then you search around enough and you'll kind of figure it out. And you should be able to tell a therapist. You should maybe even be, there should maybe be a certification for people who deal with this kind of issue. So that you could trust these and you don't have to burden like an average everyday therapist with like, oh my God, what? I don't know how to deal with fucking pedophilia. I'll just turn her in, you know? So we could have that situation going on, but then otherwise, yeah, I think especially if you're attracted to adults as well, it makes it very like, why do you even need to talk about this with more than a few people? But at the same time, you know, she talks about how in her life, because she has she's attracted to both, she's helped other people who are attracted to children to get a little bit less hung up on that attraction and to start being attracted to adults. Many of them are socially retarded, and so they don't know how to hit on other adults. And so it's easier for them to befriend children and to get, and so they, I think their brains just kind of go with that and they don't know, you know how when someone's attracted to you, you often are more attracted to them unless they're being clingy and weird and trying too hard. But you know, it's flattering when someone likes you and someone right. gives you a little attention and is staring into your eyes a little bit. Sometimes you're like, oh, you like me? Well, then maybe I do like. And I think because these pedophiles, many of them, again, are socially retarded weirdos, they're not getting hit on by adults. There's no feedback loop of that kind of interest. And so if they can learn some social skills and go to some places where it's like, oh, maybe we could hit on each other, maybe then. So I think she's doing a good thing, helping some people who are attracted to kids also become attracted to adults. That seems like a good thing. And so because of that, I could see her argument that the more out she's able to be, the more she could actually, you could imagine a world Amsterdam-like where she could put her shingle out and say, if you need help learning how to be attracted to adults as well, I have experience with this myself, and I would like to kind of be your, groom you into being attracted to a children too. I mean, that's a, you know, like that's just something that she does for people, but that could be a business. She could be a therapist for people if that's really working and the way she says to. She's gotten people to be more attracted to men as well who had issues with men. I think it's mostly trans women who kind of have a self-hating thing that they had to run away from, you know, so not liking their bodies. They couldn't like men at all. She's helped them with that. So it's like, seems like she's actually pretty good at helping people to evolve and develop their sexuality. So if that's the case, then I could see her, it being a good thing for her to be able to be more out about this. Just like you could, a heroin addict is also likes other drugs, much less food and whatever. And so you could think of it that way. It's not just two different flavors of chocolate chip, but they're really into heroin. And so that's just a big part of their life and a big struggle. If they want people to know them and love them and understand them, then they want to be able to be somewhat out about that without everyone just condemning them and thinking they're completely horrible. I don't know. I mean, I could see it. I don't know why anyone would want it to be something where you're wearing on a t-shirt, going around the world going, just so everyone know, you know, you don't need to wear that. There doesn't need to be a rainbow flag, another one of these queer flags for pedophilia where you put it on your bumper sticker. I think that would be over the top. But if there was a section in a magazine or on whatever, you know, a little tiny thing on Craigslist that was for fucked up stuff you wanted to advertise, and then you could put that there and not go to prison, you know, that amount of out about it. It does seem like there's some room for our society to allow people to be more out about this in certain contexts.
You touched on something interesting, like what if these people are a little like Asperger-y or socially retarded? And so if you say hi to a kid, they're just open and they'll say hi to anybody. And is this the root issue of this more of a rejection dysphoria? So if you are attracted to another adult and then they go, no, I don't like you. You smell bad and your politics are stupid and I'm not attracted to you. That's rejecting. So I've been in a party where I didn't know anybody and I had like rejection dysphoria. I was just feeling insecure that day. And so like, then I just hang out with the dog. Like I just say hi to the dog. Yeah. Like the dog's not gonna, he's gonna, you know, so you scratch his belly for 2 minutes. He's your best friend. You know what I'm saying? So, and then I warm up and they're like, oh, whose dog is this? Okay. Now I'm in the group of adults. Now I can like, just like as a conduit in. So this is, I know this is bizarre, but like, I think a rejection dysphoria or like, is sort of a root cause, like you were saying, like the social retardation aspect of this.
Yeah. I think there's a component of that for a lot, if not most, if not all of these people. But I think that also you have to factor in other things because it doesn't matter how rejected I would be by adults. I'm not attracted like the physically that because I have all kinds of intrusive thoughts and it's not like I haven't had intrusive thoughts about, you know, what if I am attracted to kids? Because for a long time, that was what people said about gay people. They were worried about getting on the elevators with us and, you know, whatever. And so, you know, I've had that. And then I just kind of very quickly talking to her, I think you hear me go through this. I'm like, oh, but physically that's disgusting to me. You know, like when I think about sex with a kid, I'm like, I don't even like it when adult women aren't developed. So, you know what I mean? Like that's so you, that would have to be there. You would have to still have this crazy thing in your brain where you could be physically attracted to children. So I think for most people, or at least most females, that's just off the table. Now it's possible because if you're male, if you have, you know, y'all have a different testosterone thing going on. There's a spectrum obviously with y'all and your sex drive. But, and I mean, when I say male, I mean, I'm just talking about whether if you haven't transitioned to woman yet hormonally, whatever, it doesn't matter whether you identify as a trans woman at some point or not. People who are male are much more likely to be attracted to children and or to molest one. And so it's possible that y'all's sex drives are just high enough because again, for most men, they're not like I am with my narrow range of sexuality. Like there's kind of body types that I'm into and there's a range. And outside of that, I just can't get it up for you. But I think for most males, y'all will fuck a lot of people. There's a huge, even if it's not your favorite, you'll still be like, well, I still like to fuck. And so I could see that maybe for particularly for males, if there's maybe there still has to be a little genetic something in there. But then if you're the kind of I like the term socially retarded because it's funny to me, but you know, I thought it'd be fun to make a documentary called Socially Retarded and just document all the different kinds. Cause there's, you know, now we just started calling everything Asperger's at some point, but it's like, no, there's all these different things. But then I thought it would be fun to just call the exact same documentary high functioning. It's like probably can't get away with calling it socially retarded, but anyway, but on your podcast, I figure I can. So I think that has to be there. I think that it makes sense to me, but I am like very Freudian without the cocaine. I still have that same sense of like, this makes sense for sure. So it feels right to me, but who knows? We could be completely full of shit, but it feels right to me that if you a little socially retarded and you get rejected by adults, you don't know how to deal with them, but kids are nicer to you. It's easier to talk to kids. Your brain's a little childlike because you got Asperger's, whatever. And you have a male sex drive. Then there's going to be some room, but there may also still need to be some kind of genetic thing in there that goes, you know, I think, and maybe it's just again a spectrum, but some percentage of people, and especially in a larger percentage of males, have the potential to also be attracted to children. I'm starting to think it's quite rare for people to be only attracted to children. I think even, you know, like the famous one, I think there's still, for most people, there's still some attraction to adults. They just get really fixated on the attraction to children part.
Yeah. So, I want to talk about, I think that you were like, there's something missing like in this person. And the trauma, I think, is the element that sparked all these intrusive thoughts, particularly the age range of this particular person when the trauma was most severe. But I want to talk about something before I get into that next clip, because this is really important for me. And I think a lot about this because the reason why I have issues with the law is because I got in the way of someone getting meth and then they called the cops on me. Okay. So my roommate was trying to get meth and take somebody with him on a ride to the dark side. And I protected that person and he called the cops on me because I blew his meth deal. I go, how wired is your brain to get this drug, right? Where the person that we're splitting rent together to keep our overhead low, you betrayed them for the meth, right? So I always think about this, right? And this is a very famous study, but one scientist was like, I want to find out if cocaine is addictive. So he put 10 cages with 10 rats, and he had one water bowl and one cocaine bowl. They all died from cocaine use in 3 days. And he goes, cocaine is addictive. Boom. And like nurture nature, right? And then the other scientist looked at it and goes, there are so many flaws with this study. Let me build mouse heaven. So he had one dark room with a little cocaine bowl, and he made the room like dingy, and it had a concrete floor. The rest of it had nice mulch that was soft on their little mouse hands. They
like
had
a crack house.
A little like den of iniquity. But then it had like all these tubes where they can go and socialize in different, and it had like one like literal spa cage. And then it had one
like a McDonald's playpen, Disney World for rats.
Sure. And then it had like all the best food, like carrots next to celery, next to this. It even had like a sanitation area where they would all poop and then the scientists would clear the poop out. So the mice learned, okay, I'll poop here. I'll eat here. I'm going to go disco dance on Fridays. Like I got things to do. I got Mormon class. There's coffee over there next. You know what I mean? Maybe I'll be a lesbian who likes coffee. You know what I mean? I'll get out of this dogma.
Yeah.
And so the amount of mice that were addicted to cocaine, it was like 2% or 2.2%. And it's like, yes, that's it. The environment.
Yeah.
Part of this, I think, is my brain. Like, because I went to I love public school. People shit on public school all the time. I love it. There's a clarity. Boom, you go to math. Boom, you go to history. Boom, you go this. And I did this for 18 fucking years or whatever. Then I went to college. Then I went to grad school. So in my head, I have a playground where I go, there's so many options for me. Every day is a new possibility. Like I'm working on a book, I'm playing shows. I was just at the Secret Group with Kyle Smith. I had the best time in Houston doing shows. You know, I have like a playground in my head. So to go down the heroin crack route and to destroy my friends around me, call the cops on my friends around me so that I could get meth is impossible. And then, you know, I realized that there's just like other things going on with this person of why they called the cops. And to make it short, trauma. This person has a lot of trauma, but at a certain point, it's their responsibility. So I like this person trying to rehabilitate themselves from these intrusive thoughts. And I also, you know, appreciate that this person is never offended, right? So that I always go back to that. Okay, so they're very much broadcasting their attraction, but they've never offended. Can this person be a catcher in the rye to rehabilitate other people so that nobody gets kitty fiddled? Let's send this person to Washington, D.C. and work the rounds in the Senate, because I think that's where they're most needed. But anyway, that's a side issue. So let's talk about clip 6 here.
To actually meaningfully escape. But the runway to remote should be legal. And it's insane that that's illegal. Like, if I was transported back in time to when I was 8, with all of the current knowledge that I have right now and all of the current ability to think,
yeah,
like, there's still nothing I could have done when I was 8 to actually get away from my abusive parents. There's nothing, right?
Yeah.
Like, there's nothing 8-year-old can do to actually get away that doesn't involve, like, potentially throwing themselves into a more abusive situation in the foster care system.
Yeah, you know how you can, like, drop off an infant at the fire station and they'll take care of it? You should be able, as an 8-year-old, to, like, go to the fire station. Be like, no, I actually need to get out of this house. And, yeah.
I think the solution to, like, large-scale child molestation is mostly just letting kids leave.
Yeah, so wait, were you
being molested?
You were being molested as a child?
I was not personally molested.
Oh, okay. You were abused.
I was raped when I was a minor, but not by my parents or by an adult. It was by another teenager.
So this person was raped as a teenager, but it sounds like there was a lot of like beatings, physical abuse at eight. That number hit me hard because when they said who they're attracted to, it was 9 to 14. And I feel like this person is obsessively going back in their mind to try to save themselves. They want to save themselves. Yeah. And that turns into this attraction. It's a traumatic reenactment going back in time, you know?
Yeah, or just kind of arrested development at that age. I mean, people said the same thing about Michael Jackson, that, you know, that with the career and the way his dad was, you know, just kind of got arrested at that age emotionally. And so I could see that kind of, because I mean, I know from my own experience as of what I will just call abuse from my mother, I'm hung up on it. You know, I know there's therapists who do this thing where you go and like comfort your young self. You imagine being that young self and then also being someone who comes your adult self now and telling her it's okay, whatever, like kind of that you should regress because you're already doing it. So you should regress to that age to deal with it. So I could see how, it's very likely that, yeah, like if you get really hurt at these ages, then like a possible outcome of that is that's where you're stuck on some level. And so you're attracted. I mean, that's very possible. I mean, it you know, the math basically checks out. So
yeah,
I don't know what you do with that other than talk to a therapist, but she can't.
And I just, that's where I've started to feel really bad for this person, because it's like, okay, they're speaking around, they were raped, they're speaking around all this trauma when they were eight, they're attracted to 9-year-olds. And it's just like, that just kept on going in my head over and over. Like, I should be able to escape. I should have been able to escape my parents. I should be able, they said, this person keeps harping on this issue. And that's so sad for me because it's like, you know, I grew up decent in Jersey. I had a trampoline in my backyard. You know, there's a little bullying in high school, but honestly, I think that made me a better comic. You know, I was an exchange student in Germany when I was 16. Like I said, like I had a good mouse heaven, you know, and sure, I thought about escaping, but that was always like exposure to new things was very big in our family. Right. So, and also just talking about my niece and nephew, like they might be like, oh, what do you want to do today? I want to sit and watch cartoons all day. No, but then you get them to like a trampoline warehouse and then they're going nuts. So it's like, yeah, when the parents know what's going on, they can create they can expose them to positive activities. Then it's like try to get them out of there when their wristband says that their hour's done. Now you can't even get them out of the trampoline park, you know?
Yeah.
Type of thing. So like they might go, oh, what do you want? Oh, I want macaroni and cheese. Oh, well, here's salmon and like a spinach salad. Oh, that looks disgusting. No, I want macaroni. Yeah. But then it's in front of them and it's delicious. So when the parents are like very motivated in the child's development, then I feel like they don't have as many intrusive thoughts and this sort of trauma of traumatically reenacting the worst aspect of their childhood over and over.
Yeah. Well, and so what we have here is this trans woman, non-offending pedophile, playing the role of parent to herself currently, right? Yeah. Because there's part of her saying, what I want instead of macaroni and cheese cartoons, what I want is to be with kids. But then the adult part of her says, oh, we could go to the trampoline park of adults though. And then she's like, okay, you're right. Let's do that. I mean, I think that's kind of, she is split that way. And we all have to be our own parents in a lot of ways. And so she's, unfortunately, it's just a burden to bear. We all have burdens to bear, but that's her burden to bear. And I think she's doing a pretty good job of it.
And you brought up in your podcast, piercing ears. And yeah, that is interesting. Parents agree to have their 5-year-old go down to the mall and have a bolt shot through their earlobe. They'll take
sometimes 1-year-olds. I mean, that's before any consent possible. Well, and that's the point I'm making is like, yeah, you can pierce your baby's ears. You can also circumcise your baby. Seems like it's also the parent's legal right to give your baby a Prince Albert at this point, you know, but why are we, adults choosing things like that for kids don't make any sense to me. I mean, when you're getting circumcised because it's part of your religion, and especially when that developed in a time before anesthesiology, like some sense was made, we figure it's less traumatizing for a baby than an adult. But at the same time, they also did it to adults who converted. But at the same time, we actually don't know how traumatic it is for babies and whether it does just pass over them or if it is quite weird psychologically for them. But nowadays, we have great anesthesiology. And if you want to get circumcised as a 9-year-old or a 17-year-old or a 38-year-old, you can do that. So I don't know why adults need to be choosing. I mean, your ears, it's like, okay, if you really want to get your baby's ears pierced, they'll close up. It's not that big of a deal to do that. But like circumcision, I think it's, you know, it's just kind of a barbarism at this point. Even if you're Jew, like, it doesn't mean more to let them do it himself when they're a little older. I don't know.
All right. Can I, my hot take is I've been circumcised. I'm Jersey Catholic trash. My hot take is, okay, I think it socialized me a little bit because, you know, my sex drive is already like, you know, pretty up there. And so like it took my sex drive mm-hmm. down to like a level where I can like keep my checking account in order and like pay my
taxes. You think being circumcised lowered your sex drive?
I believe so.
When were you circumcised?
For manageable levels. I was circumcised like as a baby, like pretty much.
Oh.
Day two.
Well, then how do you know it's lower? Because studies have shown your sex drive is actually higher. Not your sex drive as much, but that masturbation is less pleasurable for you because the skin that they cut off of your dick, if you keep it, it acts as a fleshlight, essentially. And so you get to kind of jerk off into that. And so masturbation is actually more satisfying for you. Also, being circumcised makes your dick desensitized, just the way our hands are less sensitive because they're touching everything all the time. The exposed skin of your dick, if it's circumcised, means that the skin deadens a little bit. And so it takes more to get you somewhere, which can be useful. It can help you to last longer. But basically, that still means you have a kind of a higher sex drive ultimately because masturbation and sex are less satisfying for you. It's like eating low fat cookies. You actually just want to eat more.
That's an interesting
question. Now it was popularized in America outside of any of the Jewish situation because that guy, John Harvey Kellogg, thought it would have a quote unquote salutary effect on men's sex drives. He thought that it would make boys less likely to masturbate, to one, have the experience of circumcision as babies. He thought that tying that pain to your dick would help men to ultimately not want to masturbate as much, to associate their dicks with pain. Very Victorian era stuff that was happening. And then he also thought, you know, because he could see from himself, from his own, he was plagued with wanting to masturbate and have sex and whatnot. So he could see, he looks down and he sees himself jerking off into the fleshlight of his dick skin and thinks, these Jews are so lucky. They don't have a little nature's fleshlight here. And so he thought if we remove that skin, then people will masturbate less. But instead it had the low fat cookie effect where people just get obsessed because the masturbation is way less satisfying to them.
Listen, and this is just devil's. I've never not been circumcised, right? So I don't have a comparative mm-hmm. thing. But I will say this: I have many things to be insecure about. You know what I mean? Like, you know, obviously, I have a perfect like Olympic swimmer body. Like that, that's fine. But you know, I'm bald. I'm this. I'm that. I got insecurities. I got weird nose hairs. I got to always worry about. But you know, when ladies finally get down there, you know, they're like, oh, this is very, this looks nice, you know, so I think it looks okay. So that, you know, so that's the other.
Well, yeah, we've all been raised on these things now. So, I mean,
we've all been raised on beautiful circumcised penises. We've all been raised by this.
We have. I mean, even as a lesbian, if you think about me going into the sex store, right, the dicks are all circumcised. So to me, I agree. I think that uncircumcised dicks look like little sandworms and they creep me out. Yeah, if I want to buy an uncircumcised dick, I have to pay for it in euros. You know, I mean, not the nicest sex stores now, they have a couple, but I don't care for it either. But that's because we were groomed that way. If we did it for a generation where we just didn't do that, then everyone would kind of get over it. I think we're just used to it. And I think it's fine. There's pros and cons. It's easier for you. Men are gross and y'all aren't cleaning your dicks enough. And so it can be helpful. Also, again, if you're desensitized, it can help you last longer. There's pros and cons, just like there's pros and cons to being kinky because you were raised in our weird Christian religions. It's fine. I don't think you should feel bad about it at all. It's just, I think the options should be more thought through. And I think that it just doesn't make sense to me that parents should choose that for children because it's so feasible now to choose that for yourself. And I don't want people cutting girls' vaginas up either, you know, in all those countries where they do that. And it's a little too close to that, that we just do that to babies, especially again, it's long history with Jews. And you know, I love the Jews and I'm not trying to tell them what to do, but this thing that came out of the tradition of a guy who was just anti-sex, anti-masturbation, convincing everyone that we should all chop little boys' penises up. It strikes me as quite strange. And I just think there's no reason kids can't choose that when they're older for themselves.
You know, and it's just like, you know, maybe it's more positive for that person to just work the deli slicer, you know, and just have the mint chip. Mm-hmm. If the rocky road is causing all this pain, just have mint chip ice cream. That's fine. You know, just switch your preferences if it's better for humanity. Okay. This is the most problematic clip I had is clip 7 here.
There's been that, obviously there's whatever happened with the Greeks and Romans. I really should look into that more considering how, anyway. But also those civilizations like fell and everyone thought, you know, I'm not really sure, but I know.
It's interesting to me, I've definitely heard pedophiles talk about this for more knowledgeable about the history than me. Uh-huh.
Okay, so that was the line there. She said,
what did she say?
Pedophiles that are more knowledgeable of the history than me said this.
Oh.
Pedophiles who are more knowledgeable of the history than me said this. That's what I was like, oh, you're in an echo chamber. And maybe this is all online chat stuff of pedophiles on online.
Yeah.
Hopefully they're not sharing horrible materials are just
it says they're not. I think it's drawings and stories, yes. Actual child porn, no.
Hand drawn. Okay.
Yeah.
But you know, so that's I have been in comedy scenes in different cities. And I'm very keen to, and I try to just avoid the situation without being too much of a Jersey douchebag about it. But there are like situations where there will be a room that's like a decent bar show. Okay. And then this one person who hosts it has like five friends. And then every Tuesday, the same five friends go to the same bar show. I'm not naming names right now. And what happens is this becomes an echo chamber of emotional support hacks because they do the same material in the same venue every Tuesday at this time. And instead of, and they, you know, have all these other insecurities. So when someone sucks at comedy or doesn't work hard or write, they go, oh, okay, see you next week. And there's no accountability because of this friendship. Then other comics who are killing it around the scene are just kept out of this echo chamber of losers. And so when this person says, oh, well, you know, pedophiles who are more knowledgeable than me said this, it's like, who are you? Just like you said, exposure therapy is the way out of this. Having different ice cream choices if one is destructive, putting a trampoline park in your brain or in your monthly rotation of things to do can just blast you out into your rut and just go, wow, this is an experience I never thought I would enjoy. You know, just adding positive things. So this I felt like was the most problematic clip there.
Okay, well, so I think let me see if I'm hearing you correctly. Potentially, this person, by spending a lot of time online talking to other people who are attracted to children and sharing stories and pictures and whatnot, instead of thinking of being attracted to children as an identity, she should think of it as being interested in heroin or some other addictive. It's an addictive, it's something she's attracted to, but wants that's not healthy for her. And so she should think of it just as a problematic thing that she's a drive but not as an identity. Because if you think of it as a drive and instead of an identity, then you know what? Put down the drawn kitty porn and go find some more hobbies and make friends who aren't, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, it would be better if she would talk to a therapist. It would be better if she could be in that therapist Rolodex, maybe, of people who, hey, you know what? You can use me as your therapist, and then this person will help you to learn how to be attracted to adults too. You know, there could be a system like that. But then at the end of the day, she should be spending 97% of her time and energy and thoughts just going and exploring the roller coaster world rather than going and drawing pictures of the heroin bowl in the dark room. And yeah, I mean, you know, I agree that, and maybe you and I are inherently a little bit more conservative than some people or a little older. That's where my brain defaults to, is that that's probably the right answer. I don't know though, because I just can't, you know, I'm not going to be like Freud and just be like, here's my theory and I'm sure of it. I just think that that's possible, but it's making me think that maybe I should use, if you'd let me, like a chunk of our conversation here as, because you know what, my politically non-binary, I want to have episodes where people then come on, you know, you hear an episode and you go, I think y'all are wrong, or hey, I have questions about that. Because then it's like, yeah, now you and I are having this conversation and now we're taking the ideas that we just explored and now we're going further. And then, you know, if I put this out and someone else says, no, you guys are wrong. This is why it's not like heroin. Then we can have that. But it's like, you know, I'm not sure, but I definitely see that as a possibility that at some point this is self-indulgent and you're attracted to adults already too. And maybe if you would just stop thinking of that as your identity, and, you know, and this puts me, but isn't this kind of central to a lot of what the conservatives versus the liberals have been fighting over for decades? But they said the same thing with gay, right? They said with gay, hey, it's not your identity. You just struggle with same-sex attraction. And so you should figure out that we have therapies for you, whatever, but you should figure out how to get over this and live a healthy, normal life. And then everyone's kind of like, no, I think gay is a real identity thing, or there's something going on there where, you know, it's not fucking kids. And it's like, we can take this on. With gender, we're in that place too. Like, how much of this is an inherent identity and how much of this is some kind of disordered stuff that maybe there are ways that we could help you feel comfortable with being male or female, but learn how to express yourself differently, whatever, and you know, and get society on board. It's hard because society is so rigid about it that asking people to accommodate their individual lives when they feel so, anyway, but point is, this has been kind of the thing, like, what is an identity that is inherent, immutable, just part of who you are? And what is maybe some disordered thinking, something that you could work on, something that you could, you know, conversion therapy. Does it work on gays? Maybe not. Does a certain kind of it work on some people with gender issues in terms of helping them not to medicalize? Maybe for some, maybe not for others. With people who are attracted to children, is it possible there's some conversion therapy there? Clearly it's already working. At least, you know, our friend, the trans woman, non-offending pedophile, has converted people to being at least also attracted to adults. So is there conversion therapy that would work to make you also just not attracted to kids anymore? You know, we really don't know. And because we don't get to do a lot of therapy with these people, then it would be so cool to figure out we could cure them, you know. But I think so far the people who have gotten to work with them have found it's kind of intractable. Is that the word? That they're not able, once it's in you, they don't seem to have a real good cure rate so far, but maybe we've never tried it the right way.
And that's how I feel. Like, after I got fired from Nashville Confidential, I was living in Los Angeles and I had all this debt, credit card debt and all this bullshit. And then I thought I was going to work on this show for 7 months and then I'm fired. I'm out of my ass. I'm fucked. Like, find it so many ways. And so I identified myself as a balding, unemployed fucking loser. That's how I identified. You know what I did? I went to fucking Muay Thai Academy of America. And then I had another identity, which was a fucking martial artist. Okay. So this person that identifies themselves as a minor attractive person and they're in group chats all the time, I don't think that's ideal when the root issue.
I mean, it's in people's Twitter bios sometimes.
Yeah, you know, they should have guilt and shame. Okay, those are two great things that Catholicism gave me through my whole life. I've shed it, but I have shame and guilt about my negative actions. And so, I also met hipsters that had devoid of guilt and shame, trust fund morons, and their identity was, I like this band. So that's why I doubted it. I like this band. Oh, I really like.
Or a lot of them, it's their politics. Ugh. They supposedly have the right politics because they put their pronouns in their bio, but they shop on Amazon 24/7 and don't seem to think about the impact of that. Same people, by the way, who 10 years ago were like, I'll never shop at Walmart again, and don't. Buy everything on and not just everything, but everything they don't need on Amazon. Completely, supposedly care about climate change, but they buy stuff that comes in packages on trucks from the richest man in the world who's destroyed the middle class and is getting tax subsidies to get his shipping to be that free to cheap. Anyway, so like to me, yeah. At the very least,
I got an Amazon package coming. I'm sorry. Go on. I'm sorry.
At the very least, I think that people probably should not be identifying as especially if you're attracted to adults too, then identifying at it's I'm weary of all the flags, right? I say in a room with all these are actual countries, not genders behind me, but no, yeah, like I don't think that we need pride parades where people go, this is the pride parade for non-offending pedophiles because it's who we are and we're out and proud. And but that's kind of where we're going, right? Like if we keep saying that anything that someone says is an identity that they should be proud of, that's immutable, like we got to figure out what the line is where not all of these things are immutable parts of just who you are. Like we don't even believe in souls anymore. You know, the most atheists running around. I mean, I kind of do, but I kind of don't. I don't know. But yet it's like as if they have like a gendered soul or as if their soul is attracted to kids or something or like, you know, I don't know. I think, and especially if you have this kind of trauma. Yeah. Is it really in your genes that you're attracted to kids or is it because of that trauma? That doesn't mean we could change everybody, but we really don't know. I think there's plenty of therapeutic room left to explore whether these people could figure out how to not be, or even if it's just figure out how to they have their attraction to kids be something that takes up, you know, 30 to 70% of their time, energy, mental space to something that is like at a low 3%, you know, 1 to 3%. Oh, still have some intrusive thoughts here and there, but I really just don't give it a lot of energy. I think. Yeah, probably but maybe we are at a phase where we need to explore this and figure some things out. And so they need to give it a little bit of energy right now. And then we could get to a place where we figure out how to help people not give a lot of energy to pedophilia. I don't know.
So you said something interesting at the top of clip 7 again. I just want to play the top of this.
There's been that, obviously, there's whatever happened with the Greeks and Romans. I really should look into that more considering how, anyway. But also those civilizations like fell and everyone talked.
Okay, so imagine you're a Greek, restaurant owner and or you're pressing olive oil, you know, you're serving the community healthy food every day, you're busting your ass. And then the senator comes, I'm a senator, you know what I mean? Whoa. And like you're working, you're like a middle class Grecian, and then they're like, and then they kidnap your kid and they have like the really strong horse because they could afford like the and the horse is like struggling to have the fat Greek senator and the kiddies that he just kidnapped from you fiddling. And then when it's like a permissive culture in this area, you're like, wait a minute, I'm the middle class person. I'm busting my ass. And the fattest Greek, you know, senator just kiddie fiddled all my kids. Like, hold on a second. Can we go back to the Senate and like kind of rework politics here? And I think that's the late stages of the imperial empire. You know, they have this infinite growth complex of military industrial complex and this and that. And kitty fiddling or whatever. And secret societies and all that stuff in America today. And so it's like the right before the collapse, I feel, because the moral culture is fucked. Because look, this is what I want to say about trauma too. The reason why I feel as though I have access to a positive future. Like, I think I could have a space in making money from comedy and screen. I got my degree in screenwriting. The reason why I think this is because I wasn't traumatized. So the middle class has access to take money and resources from the idle rich, the idle oligarchy, because they're waking up in silk sheets and they're out of touch, you know, Adam Carolla. And they're out of touch real fast, right? When they get to the top, they just get lazy. It just happens. It's like a human cycle, right? So when your eyes are bouncing on, when you're trying to read a book and you have so much trauma that your eyes are bouncing around the page, you don't have access to take resources from the idle rich, right? And so, like, that's why it's just like childhood trauma, having a moral culture that is devoid of childhood trauma, for me, is the like the lesson from that I got from this thing. Like I believe in rehabilitation. This person says, I don't want to be judged for my worst day. I don't want to be judged for my worst day. I've had really bad days. And if that's like tattooed on my reputation or on the internet, like my worst days, like that's not going to serve me well in the long run. So I understand, but the problem with this person is they're traumatically reenacting their worst day over and over, instead of like going to a dojo, instead of going, getting some vitamin D. I mean, I live here in beautiful Austin, Texas.
Yeah. And no, she was quite pale. Yeah.
People go in rowboats, you know, there's a lot of outdoor activities. Yeah. Play some frisbee golf, you know?
Yeah. Like, on the one hand, she's right that she should have been able to get herself adopted into a nice family somehow at 8 years old when she realized she needed to get out of there. And that would be great for society potentially. But also as an adult now, I think you're absolutely right. And if you think about a lot of these queers, I mean, let's just go full conservative right now, right? These queers are pale. They're not having sex. They're not getting any, they don't like sports, right? I have a joke about non-binary, you know, like, you know, cause I joke about separate leagues, but I'm also not fully kidding, you know, and then, but trans people and their allies get mad when you say that we should have separate leagues at this point, because the hormones we need it. And they're like, no, we're men, we're women, whatever. And I'm like, okay, but then where do the non-binary people play? What are they going to do? And so I asked all these different non-binary people, like, you know, would you play on the men's or women's team? How would you handle this? And all of them say the same thing. I don't even watch sports. And it's like, yeah, this is a stereotype for a reason. We have all these people who are online way too much, who are not learning about community and group and hard work and, like, you know, and reality. You know, just last night I was sparring with my Muay Thai people, and this guy, you know, what happens is I'm still quite weak. I started in November. I'm going to the gym a lot, but I'm going to the gym. I'm revving up so much that I'm also always completely sore in my muscles. You know what I mean? Like, I'm like going through the thick of it, like a boot camp situation. So I'm still very weak and, you know, not very good at sparring yet. I like learning the moves and stuff, but once we're into the sparring thing, I mean, it's very hard for me. You know, but I will have some moments where I get a couple of good thing, you know, get some little combo in. Like, I'll find an opening. Even people who are better than me, you know, they have the reach, they have the strength, they have the moves, they've been doing this for years. There'll always be some little moment, you know? And so yesterday this happened, and this happens a lot where it's a man, especially if he doesn't know me really, then, you know, he'll be dominating the fight completely. And then I'll find like one little thing where I'm like, poof, poof. And immediately I can see the testosterone flare up. And this guy last night kicked me very hard in the stomach, pushed me into a wall. And the instructor happened to be there, and, you know, his English is not, he's Brazilian and everything. He's like, hey, and it's like, that's a real experience. So because this man, and this happened again, it's because I get one hit in, and he's like, he needs to assert his dominance. I'm like, dude, no one thinks I'm winning the fight. I don't need to be peeing blood tomorrow. Like, it's just what anyway, men are stupid, but, some hashtag not all, but most men are very gentlemanly, in some ways too much with these fights, whatever. And it's like, I could give a shit about this gender stuff in that moment, like, because it's more complicated than just some women you could hit harder in these circumstances. If they have stronger abs, if they know what they're, you know, whatever. But I It's that I'm weaker. It's that I'm newer. It's that, what are you doing getting your ego involved? Like, it's a very complicated thing. And so would I prefer the gender conversation language to be a little more nuanced if I had my druthers? Sure. But when my Brazilian instructor is there, that's just a real life thing that some of these queers, yeah, they're just not getting. They're not being put up against the reality. When I try to talk to them about the trans sports issue and they're like, here's my philosophical reasons why it's okay for trans women to, I'm like, have you ever played a fucking sport? Have you ever engaged with physicality? No, most of these people, things like no. And so, yeah, I do think that for a million reasons, but not least of which, like, yeah, you're right. There's a theme park out there, but when you're allowing yourself to focus on, I have this issue and there's people online that have this issue, let's all obsess about this issue together. Yeah, absolutely. They should be exploring the theme park more and just see if it doesn't just die down. Maybe you'll always kind of look at kids, you know, again, is it every kid or is it just the hot ones? So every now and then you're going to see a hot kid and you're going to be like, wouldn't I wish I could? And just fucking move on with your day because you're also attracted to adults.
They got sticky hands. You know, they're digging in mud. You don't know where they've been.
Yeah. I mean, 9 to 14 is at least like less sticky usually. I don't know.
I will say this. When we were doing some kicky punchy, I mean, you got some good leg kicks in on me. I just want to say that. We had shin guards on. We were doing leg kick drills. I mean, you're quick.
I have some good instincts. It's just, it's sparring. I mean, it's so good for me though, because I'm trying to learn how to be freer in my body and more confident in my body. And it is so embarrassing. I'll say even more embarrassing than sparring is shadow boxing. I still want to kill myself every time they make us shadow box. But...
we're winding down. I have a couple more talking points. I over-prepared for this. You know, we're hitting 2 hours. I don't want to keep you too much past that. I want to make a couple points here. So this past summer, I went to Schlitterbahn in New Braunfels with my father. And it's a water park. Yeah. And I, talking about the theme park in your brain, right, of the mouse heaven, I love water slides. I go nuts. I'm going on the scary ones. Yeah. As soon as we got there, they were like, this one's kind of dangerous. And I go, Dad, they said this is dangerous. So like only the real dudes can do it. And so I immediately challenged his manhood. Mm-hmm. Then I'm going on the water slide and like, I'm running out. Like, you know how there's like berms? I'm like at the edge of my berm and like my hands on it. I'm like, oh, fuck. Like, I don't want to die. But, you know, I got to challenge my dad's manhood, you know, but we had a great time. But look, are there some girls in bikinis running around, you know? And like, I think men are just visual. Like if they see boobies in a bikini, blah, 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 you know, you're going to kind of look. And it's so funny because me and my dad, we just went from line to line to line to line. We're just, we want to go on the water slides because they're so fun. I saw other guys literally sitting with beers, just watching the kids go down in the bikinis. Yeah. And you're like, okay, dude. What are you doing here, bro?
Well,
like, it's there. Okay, I get it. It's there. Okay.
We're in a strip club.
It's like, what are you doing? Like, you know? So I also want to, so women, you know, are very powerful, you know, and they present their bodies in ways that are like, you know what I mean? Visually appealing. So it's like, that's the only way I could, you know, whatever. But it,
empathize with that. Well, and it's not great that we do have, you know, 11 to 14 year old girls running around in, you know, bikini, sexy outfit type stuff. That's probably, we should probably tone that down as a society, you know?
So I, in high school, never, this is like such a lesson for me, right? Because I was a junior, my high school girlfriend was a senior, and they had like senior field day. And so like it, she got this shirt with like every senior's name on the back, right? And her and her friend went in the bathroom and she chopped up her shirt to make it like a halter top version of the shirt, right? So it was just like a lacy number with her belly exposed and she was gorgeous, right? Like I had problems already, like running interference on my other friends. Be like, look, okay, this is my girlfriend. Okay, chill. So, but she wore this outfit, right? The next day I had to fight somebody because this sophomore very accurately was like, that girl's hot. Like one of the hottest girls in school. And then I had to fist fight this person. And my girlfriend at the time was like, yo, you're like, chill with the outfit. Huh?
Why did you have to fight him?
Yeah, I'll explain it. So at the day of, I go, yo, maybe chill with this outfit. My girlfriend was like very much like, you can't tell me what to dress. Like, you're a Puritan or a Puritan. Well, the next day, this guy came and was like talking to her, like right in front of me. I was like, hey, dude, like she doesn't want to talk to you. And she like was like, yeah, go away, the sophomore. And he like hugged her in front of me. And I was like, dude, like, don't like go fuck off, dude. And he like kept coming around. So then as we're leaving lunch, he goes right behind us. And he was had his body to her butt. And I turned around and I punched him in the face. Okay. The next day at lunch, his friend came to fight me. So then there was just this melee. And it's like, okay, I know like women are very powerful when they weaponize their femininity, you know? And it's like, you know what I mean? So there is that aspect to it.
It's not always weaponizing. Sometimes they're quite innocent of it. A lot of these women have no idea what it's really like for men. And also, I mean, even me, I'm at my sexual peak and I'm quite visual too at this point. You know, like, but it's not that it's the same for me, but I'm just saying like there's women, a lot of women are really pretty naive of the effect that they're having with those little outfits.
Yeah,
you know?
Okay,
and so it's, yeah.
Deer, you know, they fight with antlers to the death for mates. And I literally think that's as far as this kid thought about through. He was like, oh, I want that mate. We're $2 and I'm going to fight for it. And I was trying to warn her this is, and she was like, oh, whatever. Oh, you're Puritan. I can do what I want. It always bothers me when Dr. Drew says like, oh, for women, it's totally subconscious. You don't think that they know that they're absorbing social capital with dressing like this? I just have a hard time.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Naive about quite how it functions. I think on some level, even a little bit less consciously, they do understand. Yeah. I don't know if they could all articulate absorbing social capital, but yeah. But I think they're pretty naive to like quite how viscerally it's affecting men, especially. Quite how, like, yeah, how you say this, like, antler butting culture that's we are animals, and that a lot for men and many of these men are a little socially retarded themselves, a little stupid, whatever. I mean, I hear, you know, my friend was just telling me a story like this at his wedding. That anyway, then they had to like go, yeah. So, yeah, this is something that I think that, like, and maybe willfully ignorant women. I see this from men and women, a lot of willful ignorance around these kinds of things. Men can be willfully ignorant about when no means no or not. And women can be willfully ignorant around how they're really affecting men in terms of the way they're presenting themselves in the world. I think there's a lot of that kind of stuff going on. And so, yeah, I mean, did your girlfriend not kind of figure it out at this point?
It was just like, I think that she was getting this attention for the first time, cause she sort of blossomed in this way. And I think that, yeah, it's like almost like a, like you're saying, a subconscious instinct, but there is a drive her part to absorb this social capital, because all of a sudden, oh, people are nicer to me at the lunch line, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's like, what, to your point, especially at, you know, 17 years old, like all men are just disgust. I think Jesus or Socrates said that like all men are just fucking suck pigs.
Aristotle.
Like that. Yeah. Someone like that. So, like men are disgusting, you know? And so, but anyway, so are you at Schlitterbahn to go on the water slides, or are you there to booty gaze? You know, like what part of the Mouse theme park are you occupying and preoccupied with in your mind? You know, I researched before speaking of how I'm a serial killer, but I'm a non-offending serial killer. Before I went to Schlitterbahn, all I was obsessed with was the accidents that happened there. And there was this this water slide called Verrückt, which just means crazy in German. Like that's if you're like, oh, du bist verrückt, like you are crazy, right? So they built this water slide called Verrückt, and there was a decapitation on this. On August 7, 2016, Caleb Schwab, a 10-year-old boy, that he was the son of a Kansas State representative, Scott Schwab, died riding Verrückt and was decapitated. In America, we have a bank called Charles Schwab, which is interesting. And there's also the World Economic Forum headed by a guy called Klaus Schwab, which is weird that the Schwab and the Schlitterbahn. Interesting. Anyway, you go on Klaus Schwab Jr. on Instagram, erichollerbach.com, Ariel, Isaac, Norman.com. I'm going to post your link tree. You got the gender fluid. Hold on. Your podcasts are
gender fluids.
Gender fluids. And you have another one. Fuck me. Where is it? What is it called?
Politically non-binary.
Politically non-binary and gender fluids. Any other plugs? What am I missing?
Follow me on Instagram at Ellen Degenderless. I have a little upcoming shows tab. Yeah, that's good.
And you're in Houston at the Come and Take It Festival.
Yep. That's happening. And then, so that's like May 21st to 24th or something in that area. And then May 24th to June 1st, I'll be in New York City. And this summer I'm going on tour starting like June 14th through the end of July. I'll be everywhere between Austin and Vancouver. So that'll all be up on my website soon for anybody who wants to come find me out in the wild. I'm like, yeah, you know, I'm an entertaining comedian doing, making my own way on my weird ways of touring. And, it's always fun to meet people from the internet. How many people do you think listen to this podcast?
Yeah, we're in the top, 200 in the US and UK. So a couple of, like between 1200 and 3000 per episode about area.
So if you're a highway diarrheac, what do you call your people? Highway diarrhea heads?
Look, I don't label. Like, I don't label my fans like that. You know, they're not just tools of my marketing. They're their own people.
Holler back girls. What is it? Yeah, holler back girls. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Then, yeah, if you come see me at a show, let me know you found me here.
What a pleasure to know you. We became fast friends, and you're so smart. You're so fun. One of the good ones, Ariel Isaac Norman. I'm going to stop recording now unless more plugs.
No, you're good. Woo! We made it through another pedophile episode. Okay, hopefully some of y'all are still here. I mean, I don't know. I find this topic fascinating. Hopefully it doesn't turn everybody off too much. I mean, I guess you should be not turned on. Anyway, that was Eric Hollerbach and his Highway Diaries podcast. So you can check out more of his podcast. It's, you know, available everywhere. And yeah, we already said our plugs. So like, I don't really have to do too much of that. If you want to support us on Patreon and Substack, we do have a team now. So I would love to pay them one day. If anyone wants to support that, you can go to patreon.com/politicallynb, like the letters NB. Okay. Or wrongqo.substack.com, which I promise I will fix one day. But for now, it's cute. Also, shout out to our newest subscriber on Patreon, Union Brooks. Thank you so much for being an e-patron. Okay, other than that, I just want to plug some dates. On May 12th, I am going to be doing a show at Valhalla in Austin, Texas. It's part of the Oblivion Access Festival. It actually looks pretty cool. I finally looked it up. It's like a big music festival, or, you know, like not big, but you know what I mean? Like it's, I had no idea what I was doing, but it seems like a really cool festival. And I get to open for Eddie Pepitone on that. So that's awesome. On May 13th at 10 p.m. at the Creek in the Cave in Austin, Texas, I will be on Perverts, which is Ava Smart's hilarious, insane show that she does every month. And it's like sexy stand-up, and then there's always this crazy thing in the middle of the show that's like they do a different like sketch every month, but I can't even describe it. Like what happens is always so fucking wild. So it's different shit every time, often not legal, but anyway. And then on Saturday, May 14th, is my off-script show at the Fallout Theater, where we do stand-up, but heckling is not only allowed but encouraged, and I go on after each comic and give out a prize, the funniest heckler. It's always a hilarious, amazing, crazy time. We are at either 5 or 6 shows in a row now with nudity, or at least with someone, I shouldn't say nudity, with someone taking their clothes off, although last time
someone did take their a woman with huge boobs took her shirt off. Molly Vivant, who is a comic, she's one of the comics, and people kept winning these knitted hats that a friend of mine who had survived breast cancer had made. We thought they were hats, but then we realized there were like the tops were missing, almost like a reverse yarmulke. And so then she took off her shirt and put them over her boobs. Anyway, it's always crazy, a good time. So May 14th, Offscript. You can go to Offscript Comedy on Instagram, and you can follow the ticket link there for tickets. And I mean, I have some other shows in Austin. You can go to my Instagram if you want to keep up with that, Ellen DeGenderless. Otherwise, know that I will be in New York performing all over the place May 24th to June, or to really through May 31st. And I'm going to put all those shows up on my website, hopefully by the time this episode comes out. And then I'm going to be on tour all summer. So just look for that. If you're anywhere between Austin and Vancouver, then I may be coming to your town. But yeah, I'll put up that information at some point. Anyway, thanks for sticking with us, and come back next week. Big thanks to our producer, Raymond Cabrera, our art guy, Caleb Sexton, and our sponsor, Texas Yurt Co. at texasyurts.com.